The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is Wednesday, June 2nd, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Coming to you live and direct from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon. It's not a typo. It's a way of life. And helping me out here in the studio, our wonderful engineer, Ganja John.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing, Tokers?
Hey, Tokers, want to also apologize to you. We were here in the studio getting ready before the show, and our line was open. So you may have heard us say a few naughty words.
Very naughty words.
And I apologize for that. It happens sometimes.
Yeah, it does.
Oh. Anyway, coming to us from our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half-sister, Cannabis Carrie.
I am sure glad I didn't hear that.
I know. I bet you'd have been shocked. Shocked.
Absolutely shocked that we would use such language.
Filthy. Potty mouths. Well, Cannabis Carrie brings us our news headlines right after the first break. So, Carrie, what's in the headlines today?
Oh, pretty cool today. We're going to look at two different studies. One is on the economic impact of a town in California, and the other one is a study about poker players that sounds pretty interesting. And also we're going to go to Minneapolis, where their mayor has been spouting a bit of reefer madness.
Did you say Mindianapolis?
Yes, you've never heard of Mindianapolis?
I heard of Mindianapolis.
Oh, it's going to be one of those kind of hump days here at Normal Show Live. I got a feeling. All right. Thanks, Carrie. We'll be right back to you after our first break. Also, today is Irie Wednesday. That's our daily Toker tunes we play every day. And Wednesday is the day that we dig into world music, specifically reggae, but also sometimes Latin, calypso, and so on. And we got a great music editor, Johnny Reeferseed from Iowa, who helps us out with that. We'll talk to him at 20 after the hour and get our latest Irie Wednesday tune. And of course, today is Wednesday, which is the day we have our cannabis science segment, probably the favorite segment of our chatters out there, where Dr. Mitch Earlywine, a full professor from SUNY Albany, a doctor of psychology, comes out here and answers our live questions on cannabis science, health, medicine, culture, history, trivia. If you got a question, Dr. Mitch can probably help you find the answer. So log into our chat room, create your Stick'em account. You can get your questions answered live here on the air. And at the end of the show, we'll be doing another one of my patented radical rants. This time, we're going to talk about the ballot initiative in Arizona making the ballot. It was officially announced today. They'll be voting on medical marijuana again in Arizona. And I'll tell you the pros and cons about that. All of that and more coming up here on Normal Show Live. If you want to catch the replays, you can catch them at stash.normal.org. Though I do have to apologize, we're having some FTP server issues. I've been unable to upload the shows from Friday or yesterday, so stay tuned. They will be uploaded as soon as we get that fixed, but we got some technical difficulties on the server end. We'll get that all.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Radical Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal and host of Normal Show Live. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and I encourage you to visit MarijuanaDoctors.com to find a physician to help you obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in your state. In most medical marijuana states, patients qualify with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis, and other conditions which vary by state. Learn which conditions are covered in your state at MarijuanaDoctors.com. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, MarijuanaDoctors.com will help you find a physician online or by phone to obtain a permit for medical marijuana. MarijuanaDoctors.com is fully transparent and HIPAA compliant. Call 866-996-9333 today or visit MarijuanaDoctors.com. That's 866-996-9333 by phone or online at MarijuanaDoctors.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
A recent study in the city of Oakland shows that the city could make $2 billion per year in licensing a medical cannabis growing warehouse. The six-month study surprised city officials and the economists at Bryan & Associates that conducted the $16,000 intensive study. Large-scale grows are allowed under state law SB 420, and the numbers show just what an economic force marketable cannabis can be. The report found that licensing a 7-acre cannabis growing facility near I-880 would create up to 371 union jobs paying an average salary of $53,700 a year and could produce an average of 58 pounds of cannabis per day, generating gross revenues of around $59 million per year. The large grow site would produce only a quarter of 1% of the estimated 8.6 million pounds of cannabis cultivated annually in California. To arrive at those figures, the economists had to nail down a yield rate of quantity per light after talking with local growers, then determine the amount of lights the facility could support. The wholesale price per pound of medical-grade cannabis was figured at $2,800, and the city would tax that anywhere from the current tax rate of 1.8% and up to 5% in their analysis, generating anywhere from $1.1 million to $2.9 million in taxes off gross annual revenues. Licensing large-scale grows would increase public safety, increase medicine quality, raise much-needed city funds, and create much-needed jobs for the California economy.
This is a great study. We've got it posted up at our blog at stash.normal.org. This is economist Joanne Bryan of Bryan & Associates. And they spent 6 months and $16,000 taking a look at this. So it's a legitimate study. You know, they've done great estimation. And the thought that the city itself could make $2 million per year licensing medical cannabis is great news, especially with the downturn in California with their economy. The addition of 371 union jobs. Good paying jobs with an average salary of over $50,000 a year. And yet there's some, you know, people that would oppose this or that would have a problem with this. I just can't. I've been racking my brain trying to think of any other industry that would come to a city and say, hey, we got $2 million a year for you and 371 good paying jobs. You want to let us move in? The only industry I could think of that might get resistance might be BP if they wanted to drill off the California Bay there, off of the Bay Area.
Yeah, they probably do.
Probably do, yeah, as far as I know. But, how anybody could resist this source of revenue, and also considering the fact that people are already, you know, getting their medical marijuana from dispensaries there in Oakland, well-regulated dispensaries, it's only natural that the production element of this also come under some sort of regulation, some sort of reasonable regulation. Now, there are those who fear these large grows, this large warehouse growing situation, but I always want to remind them that there will always be a market for hand-grown, organic, hand-trimmed cannabis, right? People worry about this Walmart model. Oh, my God, you know, the Walmart of weed is going to come in, and they'll lower all the prices, and they'll lower the quality. Well, if they do lower the quality, that's where the niche market for people growing their own cannabis, growing high-quality hand-grown cannabis, begins to take over. So this market is changing, and people are going to have to adapt to the change, but it's changing for the better overall.
Minneapolis has been the stage of a dangerous feud among gangs recently and the cause of an uptick in the city's murder rate after several years of decline. Minneapolis has suffered with over 20 murders this year so far, a tally that is higher than all of last year. Police Inspector Michael Martin of the Northside Force Precinct said that newer gangs have tried to gain respect from other gangs through violence. The newer gangs are more loosely affiliated and more random than traditional gangs that they have seen in the city. While the reason that gang culture thrives in urban areas is complicated and often due to many factors and pressures, Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Rybak has blamed marijuana users for the violence, saying that their habits fuel gangs. He was quoted by the Star Tribune last week as saying, "When you pay for marijuana, you are paying for the bullet that goes into the head of someone on the streets." He said too many people have winked sideways without being honest that it's a white middle class Minnesota that's paying for the drugs that put profit into gangs that kill people. He continued that the city did have plans to put more resources on the street with a lot more people and technology, but declined to give any details, implying that it would tip off criminals. The recent killings in the city of 17-year-old Alicia Neely and Kyle Parker, a high school basketball player, has heightened tension among gang members who fought at the funerals, and the city is bracing for the retaliation killings that often follow.
The thing that always comes to light in a story like this, or I should say doesn't come to light in a story like this, is everybody ignoring the elephant in the room, and that is it's the prohibition of the marijuana that has the gangs in charge of marijuana trafficking and sales. It's the prohibition of marijuana that prevents the buyers and sellers of marijuana from settling their disputes in a court of law. It is the prohibition of marijuana that prevents these people, if they do have disputes that remain unresolved or have people breaking their rights, you know, abrogating their rights, it is the prohibition that prevents them from calling police. So again, the Minneapolis mayor here is blaming the wrong demon here. He's demonizing the consumers of cannabis rather than the prohibition of the cannabis that makes this all possible. Those of us who are smoking pot in Minneapolis or wherever, we don't want gang violence. We don't want to have to buy our marijuana on the street. Some of us are lucky enough to know people that grow or grow ourselves. So in many cases, people's purchases of marijuana have nothing to do with the gangs. But for those whose purchases do have something to do with the gangs trafficking of marijuana, again, it's our failure to regulate this that allows the gangs to have this lucrative market. Now, the mayor can wish all he wants that people would feel guilty and not buy marijuana, knowing that it involves gang violence in some cases, but it's never going to happen. People always have and always will smoke marijuana. Now, you can put your head in the sand and try to deny that and allow these gangs to continue to have a lucrative market, or you can get real and recognize that many people like to smoke pot and that we ought to control that. We ought to regulate that. We ought to be sensible about that instead of, again, turning a market over to criminals who don't mind shooting each other and never check kids for ID.
A recent study conducted by researchers from a Florida university found that 80% of poker players who participated in a poll admitted to using some form of performance-enhancing drugs in order to improve their play, with more than a third of the respondents admitting that they smoked marijuana to enhance their poker playing skills. Participants of the study represent a broad cross-section of poker players worldwide at tournaments and online from the U.S., Canada, Europe, and Asia. Of those surveyed, 25% profess to being professional poker players, with more than a third claiming semi-professional status. The players responded that they took cognitive and performance-enhancing medications in order to improve their focus and concentration, calm their nerves, stay awake, and/or improve memory function. 28% of the players admitted to taking at least one prescription drug in order to improve their performance at the table, and a full 80% said they took some other form of substance to enhance their play, including caffeine, energy drinks, marijuana, alcohol, nicotine, and cocaine. Commenting on the cannabis use among poker players, one poker was quoted, "Marijuana is by far the most safe and effective substance used to aid in poker performance." Another went on to say that he has bad luck until he smokes weed. The study led by Kevin Clausen, an associate professor at Nova Southeastern University's College of Pharmacy, suggested that the use of marijuana and other substances allows players to better focus and concentrate on their game, giving them a competitive advantage, particularly in higher stakes Texas Hold'em games. One player who responded to the marijuana question said, "I know many players who claim they play better on marijuana, but I just don't believe it." A new player who attended the World Series of Poker was surprised at the number of many well-known live pros who smoke marijuana heavily. They reported that before the big tournaments and even during the breaks that there was heavy cannabis use. And I love the comment from one poker player when they asked how marijuana use helped his play. He said that it was the short-term memory lapses. He forgets which two hole cards he has that momentarily and that his opponents can't read him.
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. I forgot what my cards were, so I can't give up my poker face, right?
Yeah. That's, you know, I love to gamble. I'm a big gambler, and my game is blackjack. And, I haven't smoked pot all that long. I started after I was 21. But I noticed after smoking a little reefer and going down to the casino that my math skills were a little better playing blackjack.
Really?
And that I kind of relaxed and didn't worry, not in a bad way, but didn't worry about the chips as much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I came out, I think, 35% ahead that night.
Wow.
So I've only done that once, but we'll try it again sometime.
This story interested me, too, because, you know, I've played some blackjack and I've played some poker, and I always have a tough enough time trying to keep track of, okay, now how did that guy bet the hand three hands ago was this on the flop, and how did this guy do when I knew I had pocket aces, whatever. You know, I always have trouble remembering that when I'm sober. I can't imagine, and, you know, he mentions the short-term memory thing.
Yeah.
I think that would totally mess up. But on the other hand, the notion that it would calm your nerves and maybe allow you to relax enough to have a better poker face,
definitely,
maybe there's something to that. You know, if these successful players are playing and using cannabis like they are, you know, maybe there is something to that performance enhancement aspect. So in that respect, you know, since they're calling it a performance enhancing drug, I'm just wondering how long until we start P-testing the poker players? Right, there'll be some sort of national poker tournament, and, you know, they'll say, oh my goodness, we need to make sure they're not using, you know, anything to stay awake, or they're not using cannabis or anything like that. And how you would justify that, right? Because, you know, they justify the P-tests in the sports leagues under, you know, safety and fairness issues, right?
Right.
That it's just not safe. You know, they're using steroids. It can harm their liver. It's a bad example to the kids who will start to use steroids, and then nobody will be able to compete unless they're on steroids. How do you make that argument for cannabis, right, for these poker players? Well, it's unfair if these guys are smoking pot because now all the players will have to smoke pot.
Or... Yeah, and I don't think there's a lot of kids out there looking up to Phil Ivey.
Exactly. You know, who is it that's going to, you know, ruin their life because of this whole P-testing thing? It's a great story, Kerry. Thanks for bringing it to us. Before we get on to our break time, I do want to take some time here to make a note that the Aspen Legal Seminar, Normal's Aspen Legal Seminar registrations end this week, I believe. The seminar is next weekend, June 10th through the 12th, and we will be there with Normal Show Live. Myself and Cannabis Kerry will be on site. Ganja John will be here in town holding down the fort. And we'll bring you some live streaming and some questions and answers with a lot of the people there at the seminar. You can check out more information about it at normal.org. There's a button on the right side for the Aspen Legal Seminar. And one of my absolute favorite things about going to Aspen is occurring again this year. 2 years ago in Aspen, Hunter S. Thompson's widow, Anita Thompson, invited us out to his home in Woody Creek, the Owl Farm, the famous Owl Farm home. I actually got to do a jam session. I got to play bass in a jam session up there. We're doing it again this year. We couldn't do it last year, but this year we're up there again, out there on Woody Creek. I will bring you some streaming if I can. I don't even know if there's cell access up there for me to be able to bring you any access, but you will get to see Hunter S. Thompson's home. You'll get to see inside as much as they'll let me show you on the inside. They got some of it roped off, but his work area is still there. Some amazing photographs that are really cool. And of course, the grounds itself, which are just beautiful out there in Woody Creek. That's coming. That will be on Saturday afternoon, June 12th. So those of you who follow the show, make sure you check out the stream on Saturday. Saturday, June 12th. What time have we got on there? I got to see what the time is on there, but it's Mountain Time, probably around 2 or 3 in the afternoon Mountain Time.
And you'll update your Twitter and Facebook and all that will be automatically updated if he goes online.
That's so. Right. Just follow me on Twitter, at Radical Russ. I'll keep you keep track of all the events that happen there for the Aspen Legal Seminar. Again, that's the 10th through the 12th, and it's at the Gantt Hotel in Aspen, Colorado. Always a good time. It's the only normal legal seminar that's also open to the public, and we learn so much about the law and criminal defense. It's a good education for anyone who wants to tune in. Speaking of, tune in, turn on, drop out. It's time for us to take that special break for that special time of day. Time for the Gandalf. We'll be right back with our Daily Toker Tunes.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
High as a kite, everybody!
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live.
Going to light.
Roll a big fatty.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, world, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers in Des Moines, Iowa. America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, now available on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org or mail your CD to Normal Outreach, 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Hope everyone enjoyed the break. It's 23 after the hour, and we go out to Iowa and speak to our music editor, Johnny Reefer Seed. Johnny, welcome back to the show.
Hey, and I really apologize for last week.
Oh, speaking of that, I did want to ask you, the song that we did play last week the first time, what was that?
That was a bootleg version of my band doing Got a Thunder by Kiss.
Oh, that explains why. I'm thinking, God, this sounds familiar.
Yeah, well, I ended up with two track sixes in my folder, and I accidentally grabbed the wrong one.
Oh, so, boy. Well, that's okay. We had a lot of fun with it, and we did get to play the Earl Blackwood song toward the end of the show, and that was a great tune. What do we got for today's tune, Johnny?
Yeah, it was. Today we've got another one from Tolkien Town by Souls of Love. And Souls of Love is a reggae music collective assembled by ILOC, the longtime keyboardist and backing vocalist for Eekamouth and Ross Michael and the Sons of Magoo. Throughout his career, Ilox has bridged the gap between the black urban culture of Los Angeles and the influx of reggae music. At a young age, his father taught him a musical lesson he will never forget. Ilox remembers the story with a twinkle that is ever present in his eyes. Quote, he taught me how to sing and play soul music, and he told me what soul really is, which is love, unquote. It is with this spirit that Ilox formed the Soul of Love with his wife, Jared Love Walker, his eldest son, Elijah Walker, on bass, and his longtime friend and collaborator, Gerald Kaushman, behind the drum kit. Mark Ray and Freddie Flint are frequent collaborators on guitar, as well as Nikhil Rubin on saxophone. So the date's every Wednesday Toker Tune. It's Free Up the Flowers, which has been nominated for the 2010 Marijuana Music Awards. It's also for sale on iTunes, and you can check out other music by Souls of Love at www.soulsoflove.com and at www.myspace.com/soul39soflove. So let's fire this one up and hope it works this time.
All right. Sounds fantastic, Johnny. And are you going to be in the chat room for a little bit?
Yeah, I'll be in it for a little bit.
Would you post that link up there in the chat room if they want to get a hold of that in case they weren't quick enough to be able to spell it out?
Oh, yeah, I will do that. Sure.
All right, fantastic. Johnny Reefer Seed from Iowa, thanks so much for bringing this tune. This is Souls of Love with Free Up the Flowers.
Today I was walking down the street. To my surprise, yeah, who did I meet but my eye drenched stony with the good collie weed. Won't you share a draw with me? Yeah, I got to be free. Yeah, so free up the flowers.
that, Souls of Love with Free Up the Flowers. I really love it. Thanks, Johnny Reefer Seed, for bringing us that excellent Ivory Wednesday tune. It'll be available for download at stash.normal.org.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, it's time to take a look at Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at norml.org/calendar. On today, Wednesday, June 2nd, there's no particular events on the calendar, so we'll look ahead to Thursday, tomorrow, June 3rd. Philadelphia Normal, Philly Normal, is having their open meeting at the A Space on Baltimore Avenue in Philadelphia. They meet on the first and third Thursdays of each month, and you can check out phillynormal.org for more details. Ohio Normal is having a statewide monthly online meeting via PalTalk. You can get information about that at NorthOhioNormal.net. Now, on Thursday, June 3rd through Sunday, June 6th, Normal is at Wakarusa, and I believe this is a concert festival event. That's a four-day event, June 3rd through the 6th in Ozark, Missouri. Information about that from all of our Missouri Normal chapters. Check out MissouriNormal.org, Joplin-Normal.org, and others. Just go to our website, normal.org/chapters, to look up any Normal chapter in the network. On Saturday, June 5th, Miami Valley Normal is having a TV taping in Dayton, Ohio. For more information on that, check out mvnormal.org. And there is also a fishing event taking place on Saturday. This is with Northern Wisconsin Normal. You can contact Jay at 920-410-2920 or email Jay at winormal.org. So this will be quite interesting. It looks like a fishing competition going on there. On Sunday, June 6th, Normal Louisiana is having their online chat meeting. You can check out normallouisiana.org for more information on that. The Normal Cannabis Community Calendar is available to all Normal chapters to present their events, and we also present other events of interest to the cannabis community. If you'd like to get your if you'd like to get your information featured, send me an email at stash@normal.org and check out the calendar at normal.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527. Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs, or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of cannabis science.
Welcome back, everyone. 34 after the hour. And again, Dr. Mitch is a full professor now. And as soon as we have the budget to get that voiceover updated, we sure will. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's great to be back.
All right. So before we jump into the questions, I always like to start by giving you the opportunity to give us some new news, if any, in the scientific world of cannabis research. Any new studies or stories that you wanted to bring up before we get started?
I was just telling Carrie that I just got back from Manhattan filming for the History Channel, and I was just going to ask that folks keep an eye out for a documentary on the History Channel that has at least me and Alan in it, as far as I could tell.
Oh, do you any idea what it's going to be called or anything?
As soon as I get word, I will spread the word to everybody.
Okay, fantastic. I wanted to bring up a question here, just maybe more of a subject that you could opine on, and it was a story that was in the Washington Post, dated yesterday, and the title of it was "Form of Medical Marijuana Won't Get You High, But It's Creating a Buzz." And of course, they're talking about the efforts to breed strains of marijuana that are very high in CBD, the cannabidiol. And the article goes to explain to newbies, you know, what cannabidiol is and its medical properties. What I wanted to get to on this is, what are your feelings about breeding for these CBD dominant strains? And if they do this, do you fear that some restrictive states might try to say, well, that's the only kind of medical marijuana you can have?
We do have data suggesting that cannabidiol is helpful for a number of different problems. Nevertheless, the idea that we'd only permit high CBD strains in certain states is going to turn into an administrative nightmare. The other thing is, it's no accident that CBD and THC appear together in the plant. They do seem to modulate each other's effects in extremely helpful ways. So, for example, with insomnia, which we've discussed time and again, both THC and CBD seem to work in slightly different ways to treat insomnia. The advantage of having them both is you get to sleep quickly and all the way through the night. I think it would be sad if we suddenly had strains that were only CBD permitted in some states while other states permitted any kind of strain.
And what would be the scientific or medical rationale that we could offer to those opponents who might bring that up to say, no, THC strains are important too?
In fact, the bottom line is THC strains are important for a whole host of ailments. We're going to supply cannabis for people to only alleviate a couple of disorders. That's completely unfair when there are folks who really need the THC component of the plant, particularly for nausea, vomiting, AIDS-related wasting, decreased appetite, and they're going to have to sit there and either smoke pot that's not going to help them or watch their friends with other ailments get medicine while they don't. That's incredibly unjust.
Mm. And that's a great segue for us to get into the questions that we're getting from the chat room. If you do have a question, just type it into the chat room. If you put the word question before it in all capital letters, it makes it easier for Carrie to pick them out. If you want to remain anonymous, just personal message, PM your question to Carrie. We'll start off with this question from Matter of Liberty that does get into the THC here. We know that the federal government has a pill called Marinol that they allow that is a THC pill. Matter of Liberty would like to know, how is it actually produced, and is this more or less healthy for you than the natural THC you'd get from cannabis?
It turns out the THC in Marinol is synthetically produced, so it's not taken from a plant, and it's suspended in sesame oil, so it looks kind of like the way we use, say, vitamin E capsules or something like that. It's not particularly more or less harmful than THC from natural sources because THC is incredibly non-toxic. We have, no documented cases of overdose. If you try to extrapolate from animal data, it looks like you'd have to, smoke 2 pounds of pot to get a lethal dose of THC. So there really aren't any health concerns either way. The drawback of Marinol is it has to be orally administered, and there's no cannabidiol or any other cannabinoid present. So it tends to be extremely debilitating for folks. Because it's orally administered, it takes a while for it to kick in, so you're unsure of your dosage until you're too far along to sometimes know, whereas if you're using vaporized cannabis, you can judge the impact pretty quickly. And it also only comes in certain size tablets. So ideally, you'd be able to vaporize, take a small amount. If you needed more, take a little bit more at a time. Unfortunately, if 2.5 milligrams is all you can get, then you either end up with no relief or end up with, discombobulating effects of THC, and you don't realize you had too much until 3 hours later. It's just a really cumbersome substitute for the obvious medical cannabis that's available in nature.
So the synthetic THC molecule or a natural THC molecule, either way, health-wise, isn't a problem. But I guess one of the questions here is trying to get more nitty-gritty on it. How do you actually synthetically create a THC molecule? Where is it coming from?
It turns out, wow, this is pretty intense, but there are basically other organic compounds with a shape comparable to THC that aren't quite THC. Depending on which approach you use, you essentially end up adding carbons and hydrogens to those molecules to eventually create synthetic THC. It's a pretty grueling process, and Unimed, the company that first did it, had a ton of federal money to figure it out in the first place. And as you can imagine, it was kind of an odd investment, shall we say, in some of our dollars.
It seems to me a lot of work to go to when you have a natural source that's so easy to come by.
I mean, can you imagine if we did this to try to make synthetic maple?
Well, hey, you know those maple syrup, my little pint of maple syrup, I love pure maple syrup. It's like $20 for a little pint now. It's almost as expensive as weed. John here had a follow-up question on this.
Yeah, and Jen Alexander actually asked this, and it was people who are allergic to the sesame seed oil, you know, that's a highly allergic compound, I'd imagine. But is there an alternative to Marinol for the people who are allergic?
Other than medical cannabis, no. They are just out of luck. And if they need cannabinoids, this is really the only way it's available, except in some really rare experimental situations.
Is that a fairly prevalent allergy to sesame seed?
It's not outrageously common, but it's not unheard of.
Okay. Question now from Gangsta-ish, who wants to know, what's your favorite strain?
Right now, I'm quite the Trainwreck fan and just wanted to shout out to everybody who's been involved in making sure that that's been available to me.
You know, my flip answer to that is the strain in my bowl. That's my favorite strain.
I have a friend who says, whatever you got.
What do you got? Exactly. Question now from OC Normal, kind of a philosophical crystal ball type question. Do you believe that cannabis will be legal in our lifetimes? And adds, I'm 47.
I'm only 46, so maybe I have an extra year on you. But I just told the History Channel. Within the next 10 years, there will be a federal decriminalization, and I honestly think that's the case. But you know, Andrew Weil in 1968 said he thought it would be 10 years. When he first founded Normal in the 1970s, he thought it'd be 7 more.
Yeah.
So we've been wrong before, but I feel like now is the time.
Yeah, you know, I was speaking with some folks here in the studio yesterday, and one of the guys I was talking to mentioned, you know, don't think that it can't go back to Reagan or Nixon, you know, within one administration. Just remember, there's all sorts of curveballs that history and the future can throw at us, so be prepared for that. All right, let's get another question here. Question from Casper, who wants to know, if you know, what is the highest THC potency that's ever appeared naturally? And if you might know what strain that was.
I don't know about naturally. Somebody in the UK confiscated some cannabis that was 29% THC, and I thought that must be some kind of laboratory error, but then they ran it through again and got 27%. So it looks like the upper 20s is not impossible. As you can imagine, finding out what strain that was a big deal, but it looks like it's probably not strain-dependent so much as the environment and growing. So resin and THC seem to increase with good genetics and a lot of heat and light, and so I think a whole lot of strains probably have a lot of potential. But again, how high is high, guys? We only need so much.
Well, you know, I've been following the potency monitoring project from the federal government, the FBI and the DEA. They compile these figures based on their seizures of cannabis. And they have said, I remember it was a couple years ago, that the highest that they had seized was something around 34%, something out of Oregon. And of course, I was, you know, tooting our horn, yay, Oregon. And the next year it got beaten by a seizure in San Jose that it was supposedly up to 37%. But the problem with that is you don't know what they're testing. You don't know how they're testing. selling it. It's very vague how they come up with these numbers, and we don't even know if that's including hash oil or hashish preparations. So very questionable, but I too have heard, you know, high 20s, low 30s as the best that I've ever heard of. Okay, let's see here.
Well, again, I don't want that to. I don't want high potency to equal best. If you're having fun, it's good pot.
Exactly, and there's so much more to cannabis than just the potency of the THC. And we've just talked about CBD, but there's also cannabigerol, cannabichromine, cannabidabidoo. There's so many others out there that have an effect in the use. I mean, if it was just THC potency, you'd go for a Marinol pill, right?
Exactly.
Okay, let's get in a question here. Let's see. This one's an anonymous question. It wants to know, can or has cannabis research helped understanding cannabinoid systems in other animals? I'd imagine they probably start with animals, right?
In fact, we've gone all the way from the protozoans up and found some intriguing things across species. In fact, way back in the 1800s, William O'Shaughnessy started some animal work with cannabis in India, and he had a hypothesis that vegetarian species were less sensitive to cannabis than meat-eating species. So I thought that was a kind of cute little insight. I don't know if that is ever going to be confirmed. And we found, in fact, a lot of variation. So rodents, for example, rice, rats, and mice don't particularly like cannabis. It seems like it just makes them paranoid. Spider monkeys, you can finally get them to get into it if you really, really make sure they've got just nothing else to do. But in general, most animals other than the primate humans, at least in laboratory settings, don't really like pot the way we do.
Yeah. And I've heard, you know, anecdotally stories of people that will get their dog high or their cat high or their lizard high. Is there a harm to that, you know, physically to the animal?
As it turns out, the biggest risk is injury. So your poor dog doesn't know he's high and then slams himself into the glass door.
Right. Okay.
I have a pug myself who's my service dog who got into the can of butter once. And he did run into the wall a few times, but his face is already flat, so you know, it wasn't really that big of a deal.
Oh, poor Milo.
Poor Milo.
Okay, next question here. Keel Hall wants to know, how dangerous to eyesight is working under those high-intensity discharge lights that they use for indoor growing?
The clincher on that is duration of direct gaze. And it's not insane to go ahead and put on your sunglasses in there. I know it may not make your acuity perfect, but a lot of times the tasks that you have in those circumstances are not things that require real sensitive visual acuity. And so by all means, go ahead and wear them in there. If you've ever noticed that you have an after image when you step out, or that for some reason part of your retina seems extra sensitive afterwards, clearly it's time to consider either turning them down while you're in there or going ahead and investing in a decent pair of Polaroids.
We've got time for about two or three more questions here for Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany in our cannabis science segment. But if your question doesn't get asked, you can always send it by email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And a lot of times these questions turn into studies. So your opinions and your questions are very important to us. All right, let's finish up here with a couple more. Johnny Reaverseed wants to know, there's a hemp question. How much hemp seed oil does it take to equal a gallon of diesel for fuel?
That's one I'll have to look up, because the engines that run on hemp seed oil can be very sensitive to minor perturbations even within that oil. And so I will have to get back to folks next week on that one.
All right.
And I'll look into that.
All right, we'll have that hemp question on next week's show. Michigan resident wants to know, what's your take on cannabis use for bipolar conditions?
So the beloved Lester Grinspoon of the Lester Grinspoon Award has published two case studies where folks with bipolar had suggested that cannabis worked well for them. Other research suggests that cannabis is kind of destabilizing for folks with bipolar, and often early use predicts a later manic episode. So it's hard to tease all this out. What I've discovered is there may be a subset of bipolars, particularly folks who are good at monitoring their own variation in essential arousal, and they know that if their sleep gets out of whack, then they're going to have a manic episode. And so they tend to use cannabis, but as a sleep aid at an appropriate time of the day so that they use a strain that's sedating, and then that keeps their sleep going well, and then they don't notice them whipping into a manic phase. Other folks who really don't have that insight or don't use cannabis that way are the ones who seem to be reporting this discombobulating effect of cannabis on their swings and their moods.
Okay. I like this question. We get out of the whole scientific question to kind of get a cultural question. Where did the term stoner or getting stoned come from?
Wow. Well, when you go back to the 1970s, there was a poster called Stoned Again that tended to repeat this notion of somehow something about being a recent cannabis smoker was like behaving as if you were a stone. And it seemed to develop actually markedly before that. William S. Burroughs has alluded to the idea that after a good cannabis, you could essentially look with complete awe at your toe or at the wall for many an hour as if you were a stone. And that may be part of that source. I'm sure there's plenty of lore about this one, though, and that's a neat question.
You know, I think the I know that Stoned Again poster. Is that the one you've got the kind of furry freak brother looking character, R. Crumb drawing that melts slowly in like 12 different panels?
That's the one exactly. If you remember that, Russ, I'm afraid you're over 40.
I am over 40. Damn. All right, one more question here to finish out the day here with Dr. Mitch, and it's a question about the hemp wicks. We've seen a lot of people that will have these little hemp twines that are rolled around their lighters, and it's kind of proposed as if smoking off of a butane lighter is dangerous because you're getting butane, so you should use this hemp wick instead. That'll be better for your health. What's the truth about that?
In order to really get lung-related damage from butane, you'd have to essentially huff the butane right out of the lighter, so it's not a big issue. Nevertheless, I find that the taste is a little bit better, so that very first hit with the wick is markedly better than that nasty butane taste when you're using some lighters. And so I think for aesthetics alone, hooray for the hemp wick.
Well, and, you know, I would sell it based on not only just the better taste, like you mentioned, but also for our environment. You're not creating a whole bunch of Bic lighters that are going to be, you know, the shells of which will sit in a landfill forever. You're just using a piece of hemp twine that's, you know, the ash from which will be biodegradable. So there's an argument, I guess, if you want to make that one.
I love the eco-friendly idea.
Oh, all right. Well, Dr. Mitch Earlywine joins us every Wednesday for our segment here on Cannabis Science. So check us out next Wednesday with more questions and answers. And Dr. Mitch, we'll see you here at Normal Conference in September. And thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. 54 after the hour. And real quick, wanted to break the news that the ballot initiative sponsored by the Marijuana Policy Project in the state of Arizona has officially qualified for the ballot. That means voters this November in the state of Arizona will once again be voting on legal medical marijuana. It's kind of a strange situation in Arizona. They actually passed medical marijuana in 1996. The problem was when they passed it, it said that a doctor could prescribe any Schedule I substance, including marijuana, but also would include, you know, anything in Schedule I. And it further had to be ratified again by the voters in 1998 for complex reasons I won't get into right now. And it was again ratified. So Arizona's had medical marijuana since 1996 and further ratified since 1998. The problem is in the word prescription. When they added the word prescription, that put it under the purview of the federal government, which controls through the DEA the license to prescribe controlled medicines. And they said to Arizonans, basically, if you prescribe marijuana, we will pull your license to prescribe anything. So Arizona's medical marijuana law has been a nullity. It's been a moot point because no doctor will prescribe it and then lose their license. This initiative would legalize medical marijuana in the state of Arizona. It would allow registered patients to be able to possess and use cannabis with a doctor's recommendation, which is the way that it's gotten passed in the other medical marijuana states, because doctors do have a free speech right to recommend anything they want to. Now, the problem, though, that comes up with this initiative is in its refusal to allow all patients to grow their own medicine at home. This is something we saw that happened in New Jersey. They passed and became the no garden state by not allowing any medical marijuana patients to grow their own marijuana. They must buy it from dispensaries that are state regulated. Now, the Arizona initiative has something called the 25-mile halo. And what this says is that Arizona will create state regulated dispensaries. However, if you live within 25 miles of one of those dispensaries, you must purchase at that dispensary, only that dispensary. No shopping around. You must go to the one that's within 25 miles of you, and you are not allowed to grow your own medicine if you live within 25 miles of that dispensary. Now, if you live outside of 25 miles, you live out in the country, out in the sticks, there's no dispensary near you, then you're allowed to grow your own medicine. But for the patients, who the majority of whom will probably live in cities somewhere near a dispensary, they will be locked into a monopolistic supplier of their medical marijuana. Now, I brought this up in November at the DPA conference and asked Arizona's Andrew Myers, he's MPP's representative there, why they were putting up this halo. And he said it was to make the dispensaries viable, you know, because it's so hard to stay in business if you're selling marijuana. Don't take my word for it. Listen to the clip.
The 25-mile halo around the dispensaries was, again, to give a market to the dispensaries in the community so that they would be viable and so they're available for patients.
Okay, let's play that again one more time.
The 25-mile halo around the dispensaries was, again, to give a market to the dispensaries in the community so they would be viable, and so they're available for patients.
We had to give them a market so they would be viable and available to the patients, as if anybody who has ever opened up a dispensary in California, Colorado, Michigan, or any of the other states that have dispensaries, as if anybody has ever had trouble being viable or being there for the patients. That excuse just doesn't fly with me. It sounds to me like they put this in there to protect dispensary owners to make sure that they could continue to have monopolistic pricing programs and to be able to make as much money as possible. It's one of the things I just do not like about this initiative. However, it is a marijuana law reform, and patients shouldn't have to suffer. It's definitely something that the community should be supporting, that should get passed. But once it's passed, my God, we've got to work to get that right of home grow to everybody. People shouldn't be discriminated against because they happen to live in the city, right? If you're a disabled person, especially if you are on a fixed income, there's no way you can afford the dispensary prices of $10 to $15 a gram that I see advertised in California and Colorado. Allow people to grow their own. That's the beautiful thing about medical marijuana. It's a house plant. You can grow it yourself. You can take care of yourself. I'm Radical Russ. For everyone here at Normal.org, from the Normal Foundation, for Ganja John and Cannabis Carrie, thanks for joining us for the show. We're back every weekday at 1 p.m. Pacific with replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
we love the earth.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Dang it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.
You're not going to amount to jack squat!